When the Buddha left home to go into the wilderness, he was engaged in what he called a noble search, a search for happiness that didn't die. He tried many different methods. Finally, on the night of his awakening, he found the truths that helped him reach that goal. Four truths about suffering and its end. He called them noble truths because they enabled him to reach the goal. That's something we should keep in mind when we think about the Four Noble Truths. They're means to an end. We're not here to arrive at the truth of those Four Noble Truths and say, yes, they're true. We're here to use them to find a happiness within. They basically explain four things we should pay attention to if we really want to find true happiness. The four truths are these: the truth of suffering or stress, the Pali word is dukkha, ranges everything from subtle stress to doubt and out misery. Then there's origination of stress, the cause of stress. The cessation, the fact that stress and suffering can be ended. And finally, the path to its cessation. Each of these truths entails a duty. The truth of suffering or stress is to be comprehended. In other words, what exactly is our suffering? What are we doing that it constitutes suffering? And then the cause is to be abandoned. Cessation is to be realized, and you do that by developing the path. Now, a lot of people seem to think the Buddha is pessimistic talking about stress and suffering like this, but he's more like a doctor. He's got a cure. When you go to the doctor and the doctor says, where does it hurt? You don't accuse the doctor of being pessimistic. The doctor's doing his job. In this case, the Buddha focuses on suffering because he has a cure for it. So the news of the Four Noble Truths is actually very good. Many people responded to hearing these truths with joy. They explained why they were suffering, how they could stop, and what they could do. It was nothing that was beyond their power. And the fact that the end of suffering, cessation of suffering, is something you can't experience in this lifetime, that's really good news. So when he talks about stress, the Buddha's like a doctor. He says, this is the diagnosis. These are the symptoms. The origination is the cause. He talks about the fact that this disease can be brought to an end, and then he tells you how to do it. So let's go down through the four truths. The first one about the suffering and stress. The Buddha didn't say that life is suffering, and he didn't just say that there is suffering. He said something that was more precise and useful. He gave a list of the different things that entail suffering, like birth, aging, illness, death, separation from what you love, having to be with things you don't love, not getting what you want. But then he summarized it in a way that sounds kind of strange. He says, five clinging aggregates. Now, the aggregates there are activities the mind does. Like form, it starts with the form of your body. Think of that as an activity, because the body is always moving. It's always an activity. If the body were just a lump of innate matter, it would be dead. Then there's feeling. You're feeling tones of pleasure, pain, neither pleasure nor pain. And the perceptions, the labels you put on things, that either words or images that tell you what they are, what they mean, how important they are. Then the fabrications, and you put thoughts together with a purpose. And finally, consciousness, being aware of all these activities. The Buddha says we cling to these things, but we may not be conscious of clinging to them. It's like drinking water and not being conscious of the fact that we're drinking hydrogen and oxygen. The way we cling, though, is in ways that actually are more familiar to us. There are four ways altogether. There's sensuality, which is your fascination with thinking about sensual pleasures, the kind of food you'd like, the kind of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations you'd like to enjoy. We actually enjoy our fantasies more than we do the actual pleasures sometimes. And we can think about our fantasies a lot longer than we can than we do and enjoy the pleasures. That's something we really hold on to. If someone were to tell you that you can't have any pizza tonight, you might say, okay, I can put up with that. But if they tell you you can't think about pizza tonight, the mind would rebel. So that's the first way we cling. Second way we cling is through our views about the world, what's important in the world, what's actually going on in the world, where happiness can be found in the world. Then we cling to habits and practices, our ways that we think that we should go about this, our ideas of what should be done, what should not be done. And finally, our views about what we are, who we are. And we're very conscious that these are our attitudes about what reality is. The world, us in the world, how we should act in the world, the pleasures we should look for in the world. But the Buddha is saying if you look very carefully at these things, you realize they're made up out of those aggregates. Your perceptions and fabrications, feelings, that all go into this. And those are very ephemeral. They keep falling apart. We try to build happiness out of these things, but it keeps falling apart, falling apart. That's the suffering, as we hold on. The word the Buddha uses for clinging, upadana, also means to feed. This is where we get our sustenance. But when you're feeding on something, it's always a precarious position. Because you know that you're going to run out of food and you have to find more. So that's his analysis of suffering. So whenever you're suffering from something, you have to ask yourself, well, what exactly am I clinging to? Is it a view about the world? Is it a view about myself? A view about how things should be done? A view about the pleasures I should look for? What are those views made up out of? Are the things I can really rely on? That's what it means to comprehend suffering. Basically, the Buddha is saying we suffer because of things we like. It's like we're addicted to a certain kind of self-destructive behavior, which is why the Four Noble Truths are somewhat counterintuitive. As for the cause of suffering, the Buddha says it's three kinds of craving. One is craving for sensuality. Another is craving for becoming. Now, the word becoming has a special meaning. It's a process that the mind goes through all the time, where you think of a pleasure that you'd like or some object you'd like to get, and then you think about the world in which that object is found. And then you think of going into that world yourself to see if you can get it. All that complex, that view of the world, yourself, and the object you want, all of that is called a becoming. And it's a process we do all the time. It's how we go through life. We identify what we want, where we can find it. And then the question is, if I go in there, what kind of identity will I have? Sometimes the object is so desirable, we don't think much about what we would become if we tried to look for it. But again, these things are made out of those same aggregates. And they're ephemeral as well. And the mind can lie to itself often about what would really be worth going for or how it could go about it. But as I said, this is a process we do all the time. We're like beavers. You put a beaver in the wild and it builds a dam, makes a lodge. No matter where it goes, even little baby beavers that haven't been brought up by their parents, you release them in the wild, they start building dams, building lodges. We go around creating becomings, not only while we're alive here in this lifetime, but as we go from this lifetime to another one, there'll be a becoming that appears in the mind. If you decide that's where you want to go, that's where you go. So it's a process that has a lot of implications. Finally, there's craving for non-becoming. You've got a particular world of experience or a particular identity, and you don't like it. You want to see it obliterated. But it's trying to see it obliterated. You take on a new identity. So there's more becoming, even in the desire to destroy whatever becoming you have. Now, the cessation of suffering, the Buddha said, is to develop dispassion for those processes of craving. Total dispassion. And you do that by following the path. The path is made out of eight factors. Again, he calls the path a noble path because it takes you to that noble goal of a deathless happiness. But it comes down to three basic principles: virtue, concentration, discernment. Virtue has to do with right speech, speaking in ways that are true, harmless, useful. Right action, behaving in ways that don't harm anybody. Right livelihood, getting your livelihood in a way that doesn't harm anybody. When you take on the precepts like this, it's not just to be a good boy or a good girl. You actually learn something about your mind, because there will be parts of the mind that want to break the precepts. You have to ask yourself why. And as the Buddha said, you break the precepts only if you do it intentionally. So it makes you very sensitive to your intentions. You have to be mindful of the precept you've taken. You have to be alert to what you're doing to make sure it does follow the precept. And you have to be ardent in doing this well. Because there will be times, say, when someone asks for some information and you know that they will probably abuse it. You don't want to tell them, but you can't lie. So what do? It just tests your discernment. Makes you more sensitive to the impact of your actions and the extent to which your actions shape your life. Then you take that knowledge and you build your concentration on top of that. Through right effort, trying to abandon unskillful qualities and develop skillful ones. Through right mindfulness, keeping in mind your frame of reference here, like with the body and the breath. And then developing those same three qualities, mindfulness, alertness, ardency. Mindful to keep your meditation object in mind, alert to make sure the mind is staying. And then ardent, if your mind wanders off, how do you bring it back? If your concentration is weak, how do you make it better? Then when finally the mind does settle down, then you get into states of strong concentration that are called jhana, where there's a strong sense of refreshment, pleasure, well-being, which you then spread throughout the body. This makes you more at home in the present moment, gives you a sense of ease in the present moment and well-being. And when you have this stillness and well-being in the present moment, you're going to be more willing to look at exactly how you're creating suffering. You can detect what you're doing, and you're more willing to admit what you're doing that's actually causing harm. And based on this concentration, then you start looking at the ways in which you create suffering for yourself. But it says there are five steps to going past your old habits. One is to see if something comes up in the mind that's creating stress. What caused it? What triggered it? And we're looking for the trigger inside, not so much outside. And then see that whatever the mind state may be, it's going to pass away. When it passes away, why? And if you pick it up again, why do you pick it up again? What's the allure? That's the third step. What do you find attractive about it? When psychologists deal with people who have self-destructive addictions, that's one of the questions they ask. What's the payoff? What do you actually like about this self-destructive behavior? When you're in a good state of concentration, you're able to detect these things more clearly and admit them to yourself. Then you finally compare the allure with the drawbacks. Okay, if you actually follow through, this is what happens. This is where the Buddha has you look at things in terms of being inconstant, stressful, not worth claiming. That helps you to let go of the cravings that are causing suffering. You see that they're not worth it. You develop the dispassion that leads to the end of suffering. So those are the Four Noble Truths. As I said, they're noble because they lead you to a happiness that's noble. The Buddha says the end of suffering is possible. All of his teachings have meaning because of that third noble truth. That's where they lead. And as I said, the truths are there for you to use, not for you just to say, well, yes, I agree or I don't agree, and leave it there. The Buddha is saying, it's like a doctor, when they go through a checklist, when they see that you have a particular disease, okay, do you have this symptom? This might be how you deal with it. If you have that symptom, that's how you deal with it. The Buddha is saying, look to see where you're suffering, where you feel suffering, what are you doing? What are you clinging to? Is it worth it? And why are you clinging? What's the allure? Can you look at that allure and realize that it's not really truthful, that it's actually lying to you? And then you develop these qualities of virtue, concentration, discernment that allow you to understand what the problem is and also to bring about a solution. So there's nothing pessimistic about the Four Noble Truths at all. They're very optimistic teaching, basically saying the end of suffering is possible, and it's something you can do. You don't have to have somebody else come along and do it for you, because it's your own lack of skill that makes you suffer. But there are skills that you can develop. Nobody else can make you skillful, but you can develop the skills. That's all very good news.